KPCC's podcasts are supported by Harvey Mudd College, where engineering, science, and mathematics are informed by the liberal arts. Students and faculty working together to solve problems and serve society. Online at hmc.edu.
Time to reporting and talking about important issues, not 25 minutes of commercials an hour. We asked and answered listeners just like you not to commercial interests. And today we are further exemplifying that by looking at a fundraising free afternoon if you support KPCC right now. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722.
Heather Parker heard the call, brand new member from Burbank. She says she's donating for her husband Doug because he should listen to KPCC instead of waiting for Heather to tell him all about what she's heard on the radio. Thanks, Heather, and welcome,
wonderful
Doug.
Wifely advice. That's great. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. So we're looking right now to get off to a great start, to jump out of the box during these opening minutes of Air Talk so that we stay on track to bring today's fundraising to a close at noon and to fulfill this massive, generous challenge by Gordon Crawford. It's $25,000. And at KPCC, that goes a long, long way. KPCC.org.
You can't afford for us not to accept this $25,000 because you'll hear it. You'll reap the rewards yourself in the programming. The amount to donate is up to you. If $15 a month works for your family's budget, please let us get the spring combo into your hands.
It's two great items. The long sleeve KPCC t-shirt. I love it. It's sort of a tan colored or off-white, very nice cotton. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful quality shirt with our call letters. Listen, learn, discuss, it says on it. You'll get that plus the brand new KPCC water bottle, so you don't have to keep lugging around the disposable ones that are recycled. Instead, you can just fill this up with your filtered water. Take the bottle with you wherever you go. $15 a month of support. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. You're helping the environment and helping 89.3.
Programming supported by Ocean Blue Rental, offering power charter boat cruises out of Marina Del Rey. Boats are equipped with TV, full kitchen, full baths, and are fully insured and operated by a professional skipper. More at oceanbluerental.com.
This is Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. It was a horrific event that unfolded on the streets of Oakland Saturday afternoon as parolee Lavelle Mixon was pulled over by a pair of officers. The two Oakland motorcycle officers were checking on his information, and the next thing that witnesses knew, the officers had been killed, both of them shot down. Later, when SWAT officers attempted to apprehend Lavelle Mixon, not too far from where the original shootings occurred, two SWAT officers were gunned down. Lavelle Mixon was also killed as a result of that exchange of gunfire. This raises the question of the supervision of parolees in California, because Lavelle Mixon was one of the thousands of parolees who were wanted throughout the state on various parole violations. To talk with us about the challenge of keeping track of all those parolees is Scott Kernan, the Undersecretary of Operations for California's Department of Corrections. Thank you, Mr. Kernan, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
The numbers on this are pretty staggering, but I guess percentage-wise, we're looking at what, about 12% of parolees end up violating the terms of their parole?
As absconders, yes. About 12% abscond supervision upon release from prison.
And is there a typical way that that happens?
Well, they're mandated when they leave prison to meet with their parole office, and there's specific criteria. Mr. Mixon he was a high-control parolee and was required to report to his agent, which he did. And after a very short period of time of staying under supervision, he absconded. And the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation parole staff, in cooperation with the Oakland PD, were actively looking for him. And, of course, the tragic event occurred.
Former Oakland mayor and now state attorney general Jerry Brown is quoted in the L.A. Times today as saying that when he was mayor of Oakland, that about a third of the parolees who came out of prison and to Oakland at some point didn't report to their parole officers. And so local Oakland police had spent a lot of their time trying to track those folks down. Is that typical, or is Oakland unusually high on the number of parolees who go missing?
I think Oakland's a little bit higher than some of the other communities, but I don't think by much. It is a problem with offenders coming out of prison and not reporting to their staff. And in fact, I think there's in excess of 16,000 statewide.
Parole officers, how many do they have under their supervision typically?
Well, that's a difficult question. It's spread over all of our agents. They have a 70-to-1 caseload, and they may have several of these parolee at large cases in which they, work with local law enforcement to find. So it's spread out amongst all of the approximately 2,200 agents we have on the streets across the state.
And what are the reasons it's suspected that they at one point lose touch with their parole officers? Is this about not wanting to take drug tests? Is it about wanting to move out of the area? What typically fuels this?
I think it's a gambit of all of that. Family issues, drug testing issues, not following the conditions of their parole, and knowing that they will, of course, be returned to parole. Return to prison, excuse me.
I know that GPS monitoring has, in some cases, been tried with parolees, particularly those suspected of gang affiliations. But is the cost of that prohibitive for this number of parolees?
Well, we have all of our sex offenders on GPS monitoring today. Pretty close to 6,500 are on GPS supervision. Of course, we do not have the resources to put them on all of our parolees.
All right. We're talking with Scott Kernan, who is Undersecretary of Operations for California's Department of Corrections. We're also joined by Kara Dansky, lecturer in law and executive director of the Stanford Criminal Justice Center. Ms. Dansky, thank you for being with us.
Good morning.
Good morning. A very sad story about these four Oakland police officers shot down by this parolee who had violated his parole and had not checked in with his parole agent. Are there fixes to this kind of thing that can be carried out?
Well, you know, one of the problems that California faces has to do with the number of people who are being supervised. And I heard what Mr. Kernan just said about the 70-to-1 caseload, which is extremely high and really a strain on the resources of the parole department. So one a possibility that lawmakers are looking into now is shifting resources and putting more resources into supervising violent offenders and releasing nonviolent and drug offenders from parole, which I think is something that they should seriously consider.
This individual, Lavelle Mixon, not only had been convicted of some fairly serious charges, but he was apparently suspected of having committed a murder, but authorities said they just couldn't come up with enough evidence to prosecute him for that. Is anything like that, can that be taken into consideration with the terms of parole, even if there isn't enough evidence to try someone for a count of murder?
Well, and this is another thing that California does that's somewhat unusual. When someone is on parole and they are accused or suspected of committing a crime, the state has the option of either prosecuting them for the crime or handling the matter administratively by what's called revoking their parole and sending them back to prison. I think it's quite unusual for the state to choose not to take either action. So it's difficult under these kinds of circumstances when we really don't know much about those allegations or why the authorities chose neither to prosecute nor to violate his parole.
And apparently a day before the shooting, that would have been on Friday, Oakland police say that they'd connected Mixon's DNA to an unsolved rape case, but not known if the officers who confronted Mr. Mixon were even aware of that at the point the initial contact took place in East Oakland. We're talking with Kara Dansky. She's lecturer in law and executive director of the Stanford Criminal Justice Center, and Scott Kernan, undersecretary of operations for the State Department of Corrections. Now, Mr. Kernan, with all the state budget cutbacks that are going on, are we looking at earlier release of some pretty serious offenders that would put them under this kind of a parole system where they could go missing?
Well, I think Ms. Dansky mentioned it. The legislature and the administration is looking at reduced caseloads to better supervise those that are more prone to be a risk to public safety, and perhaps the lower end offenders that don't pose that risk should not have the same level of supervision. Today, everybody coming out of parole has the same level of supervision, the same period of time.
Okay, let's talk with listener Bill. He's in Palm Desert, listening on the new KPCV 90.3. Good morning, Bill.
Hi, good morning. I'm a former parolee, and I'm a psychiatric rehabilitation counselor. One point is that California's tendency, more than any state in the country, has been to return parole violators to prison rather than to find any alternative as far as local programs or drug programs. The vast majority of absconders in California aren't murderers. They're drug addicted, and they don't want to test because they know that they'll probably be returned to prison. I agree that there are many parolees whose supervision can be reduced from the level of intensity that the parole board is currently they currently have to monitor them, and it would relieve strain on the parole board and also perhaps provide outlet for other programs for parole violators like drug testing or job training.
All right, Bill, appreciate your call. Mr. Kernan, you want to respond to that?
Well, I think generally I would agree with him. I think that a parolee coming out of the system that can't follow some very basic rules of not taking drugs is something that he should be returned to prison for, would might be the only variance to his comments. These individuals have, relatively minor rules to follow, and when they can't follow them and they get involved in criminality, they're returned to prison today.
All right. We appreciate the call. Kara Dansky of Stanford, same question for you. What kinds of reforms would be effective?
Yeah, well, the caller makes an important point, which is I think that when there's someone on parole who's accused of committing a violent crime, sometimes what California chooses to do is to violate and then revoke that person's parole and send them to prison. And when that happens, they can only be sent to prison for less than a year. And we see this often, that parolees who commit violent crimes are revoked and returned to prison for a relatively short period of time. And I would agree with the caller and suggest that if people on parole are committing violent crimes, they should probably be prosecuted and sentenced in accordance with the law. And for those people who are not showing up because they're afraid to be tested because they have drug addiction problems, we should probably be working with them in a different way and possibly releasing them from the terms of their supervision.
So what would that be? Sending them to rehabilitation for their drug problem? What would be a better way of dealing with that?
Sure. We should definitely invest resources into rehabilitation programs. There are some states that make use of their local jails for people who are on parole and do commit what are called technical violations. So there are graduated sanctions. There are various intermediate kinds of punishments that can be imposed that we should be looking at.
All right. And in the case of Lavelle Mixon, who killed these four officers, Scott Kernan, he had already gone back to prison, hadn't he, for earlier going against the terms of his parole?
That's right. I think he had served 9 months in prison on a parole revocation.
Okay.
Yes, and let me make the point that the tragic events of Mr. Mixon would not be a case that I would consider for an alternative sanction like a drug treatment program. This was a serious and violent offender that should have been returned to prison for the violation.
All right. I want to thank you both very much for talking with us about this tragic case and what we can learn about the parole system that Lavelle Mixon had fallen off the radar of. His parole officer had been sought. And then in this traffic stop, everything going wrong, leading to the deaths of first two officers, then two SWAT team members from Oakland PD later on in the day. Scott Kernan is undersecretary for the state's California Department of Corrections. Kara Dansky is executive director of the Stanford Criminal Justice Center. This is Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC, Big Day on Capitol Hill, with testimony before a congressional committee on what the plans are, the Treasury Department and the Fed, to deal with the nation's economy. We'll talk about that in just minutes.
Hi, my name is Gina Kim, and I'm a longtime member of KPCC. I used to have two radio alarm clocks, one in my bedroom, one in my bathroom, so that I can wake up to KPCC and then listen to KPCC while I'm doing my hair and makeup. Well, that ended up being not enough. I had to get a third one because I couldn't listen in the kitchen while I was making my breakfast. So, yes, I'm a huge fan. And look, we're all going through some scary economic times right now, so there are plenty of good excuses why you shouldn't or can't contribute. But if you're like me and you can't live without NPR, do what I did. Just give up going out a couple of times, a couple of dinners or drinks. Literally, that's about how much money it takes to do your part to help keep public radio going in our community and become an annual member like me. So support KPCC. Become a member now. Call 866-888-5722 or go to kpcc.org.
Are you in with the in crowd? KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. Larry Mantle with Mindy Steinman. It's our Power Block Tuesday. 750 members by noon today. It's not just a goal. It's truly a necessity to fulfill a $25,000 challenge.
That's because when we can prove to Gordon Crawford, the chair of our SCPR board, that we have brought in 750 members this morning, all told, by noon, he brings us $25,000. So we've got our work to do. You've got your work to do by ponying up at kpcc.org or 866-888-5722. But that's not all we accomplish.
We bring fundraising for the day to a close at noon. If we're successful in reaching this challenge, then this afternoon and evening, it's a fundraising-free PM on KPCC. And I don't just mean Pat Morrison. kpcc.org, 866-888-5722. Every contribution right now leverages a fundraising free afternoon and $25,000 from Gordon Crawford's challenge.
Now, we've broken it down bit by bit so that we can stay on track for this overall goal. That means we need 110 new or renewing members by 11 o'clock in this first hour of Air Talk. That keeps us on track. That gets us that much closer to accepting this very generous $25,000. So we need you to be the very next new or renewing member at kpcc.org.
Or by calling 866-888-5722. 110 members by noon today. Now, we can do that. I'm sorry, 110 members by 11
right
this morning to stay on track for the noon sign-off on fundraising today. 110 members by 11 this morning, so we have 38 more minutes of this hour of Air Talk to do it. Your contribution right now is key in leveraging this $25,000. And one of the ways we can do it at kpcc.org is $10 a month at a time.
$10 a month not only goes to support the programming here at KPCC, but it also provides 50 meals for families in need because of our partnership with the LA Regional Food Bank. There are hungry people right here in our neighborhoods. The Regional Food Bank provides meals to families in LA, Orange counties, and the Inland Empire. Please do your part right now. You're supporting the station, you're providing meals for the hungry, you're helping us reach that $25,000 goal, and you're helping yourself to an afternoon and evening free from fundraising.
You know how tough times are. You've been hearing our economic news coverage throughout the day on KPCC for months now. And for some Southern Californians, they just don't have enough. Mm-hmm. This is a way to help them through your thank you gift. With $10 a month in giving to KPCC, we will, as your thank you, provide 50 meals for families in need in our region. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. Let's stay on track.
Hi, my name is Eric Mueller, and I have lived in Los Angeles for about 17 years. I just joined KPCC because every time I listen to their station, I get to where I'm going in the car, and then I'm sitting in the car, and I'm still listening because I don't want to go in yet. I just want to hear the end of the show, or the end of the joke, or the end of the interesting story they're telling. And that's why I said, it's time for me to become a member. So maybe you should become a member, too. You can contribute online now at kpcc.org, or you can give them a call, 866-888-5722. Thanks.
You're very welcome, and thank you for your support of KPCC. Here's where we stand. We're looking for 110 KPCC listener members by 11 o'clock this morning. That's what we need for this hour to stay on track, to bring today's fundraising to a close at noon. Understanding that challenge and contributing to meeting it is Maribel Arita of Los Angeles. She's a new member of KPCC.
Welcome, and welcome as well. Welcome back to Mayla Putnam, renewing her membership from Manhattan. Manhattan Beach. Now, listen to this. Her family decided to donate $1 a day for each day that they mention KPCC in conversation. This is the first installment for the year. They thank us for providing the things that their family discusses.
What a fair way to do that. That's great.
It's a KPCC kitty. Dollar in the kitty. I love it.
There you go. KPCC.org. 866-888-5722. Beth Howard of Santa Monica is a new member, a regular listener, and decided, yeah, I want to support the programming. And Beth is helping to leverage $25,000 from the president of our Southern California Public Radio Board, Gordon Crawford. We must reach this by noon today. We are 110 listeners away for this hour's goal. KPCC.org.
Help us stay on track to meet the overall goal for the day. The day can end at noon today. The fundraising day can end when we bring in 750 members. It brings you an afternoon and evening fundraising free. And it also allows us to accept a very generous $25,000 challenge.
It's clear. All the benefits just laid out there for you. All you have to do is act now. Click and join kpcc.org or call 866-888-5722. Join with Michelle Meyer of Torrance. She renews her membership and says, KPCC gets me almost all my news for the day and provides me a great stress reliever during Los Angeles rush hour traffic. Thanks, Michelle.
Jeffrey Lee is a brand new member from Venice. He listens every day and he wanted to contribute to the food bank. Thank you, Jeffrey. You can do that too. $10 a month to KPCC. Also provides 50 meals for families in need around Southern California.
Yet another benefit. Yep. I mean, just it's one stacked on top of the other. So it's clear what you need to do right now. Click and join kpcc.org or call 866-888-5722. We want to have really good news next time we tell you about our fundraising and where we're standing. Thank you so much for your support.
Programming supported by your Mercedes-Benz dealers of Southern California. You can test drive the all-new 2010 Mercedes-Benz GLK compact SUV at your local Mercedes dealer. Dealer locations at mbsocal.com.
It is such a pleasure to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Believe me, we know it's an honor to be able to come your way and provide you with as much important news as we can find throughout the day, whether it's local stories or national ones like the next topic we're taking on. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner asked Congress today for broad new powers to regulate non-bank financial companies, such as AIG. The idea that a company is too big to fail is behind this request by the Treasury Secretary. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, also testifying before the House Banking Committee, revealed he'd considered filing suit to keep AIG from paying millions in executive bonuses. However, his legal advisors told him not to do it. To talk with us about the testimony before Congress today is national economy correspondent for The Washington Post, Neil Irwin. Good morning, Neil.
Morning, Larry.
Or good afternoon there in D.C. How much of this was an opportunity for House members to beat up on AIG and the administration, and how much was about really getting new information?
You know what? The tone actually was more serious and more focused on long-term issues than I, to be truthful, expected. Compared to last week's hearing with the CEO of AIG named Ed Liddy, this was much less of a kind of exercise in Congress letting out a primal roar and much more about kind of talking about how to avoid getting in this situation again. So what Secretary Geithner was talking about is trying to find ways. You know, the reason all this happened with AIG is because the government found itself with this huge, massively intertwined insurance company back in middle of September about to go under, and they concluded, rightly or wrongly, that if it did so, that it would bring down the entire world economy with it, and so they ended up rescuing it using this kind of patched-together legal authority, using Federal Reserve loans and that sort of thing. So what they're arguing for is that there should be a more systematic way that the government can take over and deal with a company whose failure might endanger the financial system as a whole.
And currently, Treasury doesn't have that kind of ability, such as, say, the FDIC has with insured banks?
That's right. So if a commercial bank were to have serious problems, and we've already seen this a couple dozen times this year, the FDIC goes in and takes it over and sells it off and has an orderly resolution. But what happened is if you're not a bank, there's no such thing like that. So Lehman Brothers, you remember it failed, I believe it was September 14th, it went bankrupt. What Chairman Bernanke and other government officials have said repeatedly is they had no choice about letting that company go bankrupt. And all the nasty stuff that's followed this last several months, this deepening financial crisis in September and all the economic fallout that we're still grappling with, many people link back to that one decision to let Lehman Brothers go under. Again, Bernanke said today, as he has several times, it wasn't a decision to let them go under. We had no choice. We had no resolution authority to try and have an orderly process to let Lehman Brothers shut down.
But one wonders, had Treasury made a decision to do that and said, gosh, we don't want Lehman Brothers to go under. We're going to find some way through, you know, what we offer economically in exchange for shares of Lehman Brothers or however they did it. Were there not other ways that they could have taken over effective control of Lehman Brothers and saved the company had they decided to do it?
They say not. You know, the truth is the government's powers in terms of putting in remember, this was before Congress passed the TARP, the Troubled Assets.
Oh, right. So there were no funds to do it then,
so
technically.
At the time, they had no funds and no legal authority. Now, that said, the government has found a lot of ways to do things that nobody ever thought they could do. So if you go back a year ago to Bear Stearns, the Federal Reserve made loans to support J.P. Morgan buying up Bear Stearns, and that's something that nobody thought they could ever do, and they found a way. But they're, you know, former Treasury Secretary Paulson and Ben Bernanke are very insistent that they really felt like they did not have the legal tools to rescue Lehman.
With this request, what was the response from members of Congress? Did they have concerns about Treasury having this degree of latitude for fear that an administration without congressional support could go down this road and put the nation on the line for a big institution, or did they seem open to this?
It's a mix. The chairman of the committee, Barney Frank, seemed open to something like this. But remember, this is happening in an environment where there's deep, deep distrust among congressional leaders about our financial policymakers. Just in the last few weeks with the AIG bonus scandal and this string of decisions, people in Congress feel like there's a deep mistrust of the Obama Treasury, of the Bush Treasury Department, even of the Federal Reserve, though they're in a little better standing than Tim Geithner right now. There's a reluctance to give them more power and more authority, especially if they feel like it will be used in ways that Congress won't have a seal of approval on. That said, it may be what has to happen eventually to avoid this thing from happening in the past, or in the future, rather. The FDIC, as we've talked about a second ago, is able to do this with commercial banks. It's not a power that gets exploited in any way that causes much dissent. And the question is, can people overcome this dissatisfaction and unhappiness with financial policymakers to give this new authority?
We're talking with Neil Irwin of The Washington Post. He's national economy correspondent. It was a rare joint appearance of Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner, Ben Bernanke, who's the head of the Federal Reserve, and the New York Fed President, William C. Dudley, the three of them, in this appearance before the House Financial Services Committee, in which they talked about what tools they'd like to see to try and avoid problems in the future dealing with the meltdown of companies considered too big to fail. If you have questions about this appearance before Congress, you can join us at 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722, and the AirTalk blog available for your comment at kpcc.org. Now, yesterday, Treasury announced a plan, or I'm sorry, the Fed announced a plan to put up to $1 trillion into toxic mortgage securities and to do so along with private investors. Neil Irwin, did much of the conversation of the committee get around to yesterday's announcement?
A little bit. The truth is, the reception of that announcement was relatively positive yesterday. Obviously, the stock market rose 7%, which makes everybody happy. On Capitol Hill, there's some Republicans who were skeptical. Democrats were generally supportive of this plan. So there wasn't much controversy over that, though there are plenty of people wary about the details and worried that will these private investors end up making a boatload of money at the expense of taxpayers. So there are concerns out there, but I think it's fair to say the tone is more mixed to somewhat positive about that plan.
All right. And was there much criticism of Geithner? I mean, he's perceived to have been politically weakened by a series of events over the past few weeks. And was this an opportunity for Republicans on the committee to go after Geithner directly?
And they did. There's no doubt that Geithner's been weakened in the last week, and he's had a very rough time. He's been Treasury Secretary for about 2 months now, and you think about it, he started out with his tax problems being disclosed, and he lost some credibility there. Then on February 10th, he rolled out his big financial rescue plan, and everybody from Washington to Wall Street to around the country was disappointed that it didn't seem to have more detail and more kind of a coherent approach to solving this crisis. And then the AIG stuff last week was just a nightmare for him. It very much undermined his credibility. This week things are going a lot better. Tim Geithner is having a much better week than he did than he has so far in his time as Treasury Secretary. The good response to the public-private investment program to deal with bank assets was a big boost. He came across well in a couple of interviews yesterday. So he's on a better footing this week, and we'll see if he can maintain that momentum.
Neil Irwin, a national economy correspondent for The Washington Post. Phone lines open for your comments or questions about the testimony on Capitol Hill today of these three financial chiefs laying out what kind of authority they'd like to have going forward to deal with the beginnings of an economic crisis and particular institutions that begin teetering. 866-893-5722, 866-893-KPCC. Now, we had the comments of Ben Bernanke saying that he wanted to block those AIG retention bonuses, but counsel advised him that it wasn't legal to do that. Did the legality of the government's action trying to stop or getting the bonuses paid back, did that come up much beyond the Fed chairman's comments?
It did, and there's some skepticism in Congress. We're the U.S. government. We took over this company. How can we not get out of these contracts? But the truth is, it's a more complicated situation than a lot in Congress have admitted. The AIG agreed to these contracts back in the spring of 2008, long before the government took over, well, long before the company went under. This was compensation for work done in 2008, so the work has already been done. It's not paying them for work they're about to do. It's kind of a backward-looking thing. And apparently, I'm told, Connecticut employment law and British employment law, where these divisions are, is very clear that, if you make a deal, you have to, abide by that contract. Now, the argument from the government, which is very valid, is that, this company is essentially bankrupt. Now, the government took it over to keep it from going bankrupt, but if it had been allowed to go the direction things were going, it would be in Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and in that situation, you really can't pay those bonuses, and then you really do have limits on what you can do. So the government's trying to kind of apply the rules of bankruptcy to a situation where the firm is not actually bankrupt. Now, that's part of actually the argument that Geithner and Bernanke made for some kind of resolution authority. The idea is that if you have some official law, some procedure to deal with the dissolving of a company that's big and important like AIG was, then you could find some way in that law to deal with bonuses and clawbacks and figure out a way to not be on the hook when people are getting paid, even though they're the people who ran that company when it went into the dirt.
Neil, I also wanted to ask you about what's going on in the Senate with its proposal to tax the AIG bonuses. Have they delayed that action?
The temperature on this entire issue has really dialed down quite a lot in the last few days. It was at a full boil late last week when the House passed its legislation and the Senate seemed to be moving very quickly towards its own legislation to kind of strategically tax the bonuses of people who work for companies that got TARP funds, that got government money. And, it's now a much more hazy process. I think people had the weekend to kind of sit back and think about this a little more and let the passion of last week and all the outrage last week fade just a little bit. And they're now starting to think a little more seriously about this and realize, we really don't use the tax code normally to go after individuals and individual small groups. Usually we use, if you want to do that, you do that through other methods. You sue people. You try and claw back the money through other ways. You don't use the tax code in normal circumstances to go after individuals, beyond which it may be unconstitutional. There's a good chance that using the tax code to deal with this would not pass legal muster.
So their concern is they don't want to have a protracted legal battle over this. If they were to pass legislation, they just feel like there's no political benefit to them in that?
Well, not only that, it's not even clear the president would sign it if it were something like what was passed by the House the other day. I think what's happening again, it's this. We're down from a full boil to a low simmer, and people are trying to figure out. It also helped the environment that about $50 million in the AIG bonuses being given back. We just found out last night that AIG executives received these bonuses. Not all of them, but most of them are giving back all or part of the money. About $50 million worth of the $165 million. That's helped diffuse the situation a good bit.
All right. Neil Irwin, always good to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
We appreciate it. Neil Irwin, national economy correspondent for The Washington Post, telling us about this unprecedented, really, triple testimony that happened before the House Financial Services Committee this morning with Timothy Geithner, the head of Treasury, with Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, and the head of the New York Fed as well. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC Southern California Public Radio.
My name is Tom Jackson. I'm a food service broker. I live in Yorba Linda, California, and I've been a KPCC member since September of 2001. I don't think KPCC should be challenged as a left-wing station. It's a mediator. It's an arbitrator of knowledge, of information, and should be considered that. I'd like to encourage all of you in joining me, Tom Jackson, in joining KPCC. Just go online at kpcc.org. It's easy. If I can do it, anybody can do it.
I know all these wings fast food establishments are very popular, but this is wingless radio. No left wing or right wing here. It's
straight
about giving
down the
you straightforward information that you can use regardless of whether you have a wing or not. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. Larry Mantle with longtime Air Talk producer, and we lost her a few weeks ago. She moved to D.C. She's back to help us. Mindy Steinman, KPCC.org.
I'm so happy to be here, particularly during this Power Block Tuesday. We have such wonderful opportunities for our listeners right this moment. With your donation, your membership at KPCC, not only do you make certain that the programming you rely upon is even stronger and better in the years and days to come, but you're able to help us leverage a $25,000 challenge from our board chair, Gordon Crawford. Gordy has said, you bring in 750 members this morning by noon today, I will donate an additional $25,000. But wait, there's more.
I was going to say, as if he hasn't done
enough
to help KPCC. We appreciate
Slacker.
It, Gordon, very, very much. But that's not all. Fundraising for the day comes to a close at noon when we hit, and if we hit, the 750-member threshold. So your contribution is key right now. We're looking in about an hour and 20 minutes or so to bring today's fundraising to a close. So you have the whole afternoon and evening fundraising free on KPCC. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. Let's update where we stand, where we need to be by 11 this morning.
64 members needed now by 11 this morning in this first hour of Air Talk. That helps us stay on track, allows us the hopefulness of reaching this overall goal by noon today. So we need you to be the very next member at kpcc.org or by calling and talking with a human at 866-888-5722.
That's where we stand. 64 members by 11 this morning. We have 17 minutes in which to do it. We need every phone line filled right now. If we're going to fulfill the $25,000 challenge from Gordon Crawford, if we're going to bring today's fundraising to a close by noon, then we need to hear from you now. 866-888-5722. Joined with Melissa Wanger of Los Angeles. She's a new member and says her children listen to the news sometimes.
Excellent.
So they can talk about it with her.
The amount to give is completely up to you. We want you to donate whatever amount is right for you. That's what's right for us. If that's $10 a month, not only are you doing your fair share in getting us closer to this challenge of $25,000, but we'd also like to thank you with the brand new KPCC stainless steel water bottle.
It's a beautiful bottle. It's copper colored, has our call letters on it, the stainless steel bodice, and then the plastic top that pops on securely. So you don't have to worry about recycling all of your plastic water bottles. This is the baby you take with you wherever you go. You can refill it with your filtered water, much less expensive than buying the bottled, and environmentally a much better way to go. This is yours for your contribution right now of $10 a month, our most popular level of support, KPCC.org.
But whatever amount is right for you, that's the amount we need you to come on board with right now during the challenge so that you help leverage $25,000 and so that you help bring a fundraising free afternoon and evening to all of Southern California.
And here's the great thing. You don't have to worry about everybody else. This is what's great. We work together collectively, but you don't have to look at your neighbor's paper. You can just make the contribution right now, kpcc.org, and you've done your part. 866-888-5722. It's that simple.
And when somebody, you're talking with somebody, another KPCC listener, and they say, hey, did you hear? There's no fundraising this afternoon. You can say, yeah, I helped with that. That was partly me. That was me.
And it's nice to take credit for your public radio station for leveraging $25,000 and for making a difference in this day of fundraising on KPCC. If you've already given, thank you so much. We so appreciate you. But if you've not yet had the chance, avail yourself of this opportunity. Do it now. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. Thanks.
Programming on 89.3 KPCC is supported by the UCR Anderson School of Management's new Executive MBA program. Working professionals, entrepreneurs, and senior leaders can earn degrees attending classes every other weekend. Executive coaching and international classes in Shanghai or Singapore are also included. For information, you can go to agsm.ucr.edu. That's agsm.ucr.edu.
This is Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Just before we hit air today, it came to the attention of one of our producers that the Washington Post had a story about a longitudinal study carried out by the National Cancer Institute looking at what the effects were on the mortality rates of people in the study based on the kind of protein that they consumed. And the news was not good for red meat. This study, which had people document what they ate and went back, I believe, to 1995, more than 500,000 people were in this study, found that there was a link between eating of red meat and an increased risk of heart disease and cancer, particularly colorectal cancer. This is the first large examination of the relationship between eating meat and overall risk of death. Now, we'll get into some of the details shortly, but first, we are joined by Jane Brody, who is health columnist for the New York Times. Ms. Brody, thank you for being with us.
You're very welcome.
I appreciate it. I know you haven't had a chance yet to read this study. It was just published yesterday in one of the journals, but does this correspond to earlier studies that we've already seen?
Yes, it does. There was a study done, the Iowa Women's Study, also a very long longitudinal prospective study that linked the eating of red meat in excess, not just a small amount, but on a regular basis, several times a week, to an increased risk of cancer.
All right. And here what they found, again, going back to 1995, subjects filled out detailed questionnaires about their diets, including meat consumption. Then over the next 10 years, nearly 50,000 men and nearly 25,000 women died. This was out of that group of just over 500,000. So after accounting for the other variables, they looked at smoking, rates of physical activity. They found those who ate the most red meat, about a quarter pound a day, were more likely to die for any reason. For men, it was 31% more likely to die for any reason, 22% of them more likely to die from cancer, 27% more likely to die from heart disease. For women, 36% overall more likely to die for any reason, 20% of them more likely to die for cancer, and 50% more likely to die from heart disease. So if there's anything to be drawn from this study, and I don't know whether it's statistically significant for the gender issue of heart disease, but Jane Brody, that's a pretty huge number.
That is a huge number. And, you know, when you think about it, red meat contains much more saturated fat than chicken or fish, which has been associated with a decreased risk of death. And that saturated fat raises the risk of heart disease, so that's not a surprise at all. As far as cancer is concerned, nobody knows exactly what it is that is the risk involved in the meat eating, but there has been shown over and over again, especially processed meats, sausage, cold cuts, and other processed meats, which increase the risk of cancer because they contain nitrites. And nitrates have been associated with a cancer risk.
And there are some cold cuts that you can buy. I don't know if they're in general supermarkets, but I've certainly seen these at some of the specialty markets that are nitrate-free, which would appear to have an advantage in terms of cancer risk. Would you agree with that?
Yes, that's true. But the truth is that the less of this stuff you eat, the better. And the low-fat and the fish fats, especially, which are heart healthy and cancer healthy, are terrific. And we just don't eat anywhere near the amount of fish and seafood that we should be eating to protect our health.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that was found here, interestingly, is that there does appear to be an advantage in eating both poultry and fish as opposed to not eating them. I had assumed, particularly with poultry, it was a safer alternative than red meat. But here, apparently, there is a beneficial impact.
Well, what we have to compare that to is what the risk is for vegetarians as opposed to people who eat poultry. And I don't think that this study looked at that.
All right. Jane Brody is health columnist for The New York Times. If you have questions about the comparative risks in eating different types of meat for overall health, we're at 866-893-5722, 866-893-KPCC. You can comment or question on the AirTalk blog at kpcc.org. Sandra in West Los Angeles asked if the study looked at how the cattle were fed organic feed or were there antibiotics and pesticides in it. And I can't imagine that this study did, because it's based on self-reporting of the over 500,000 people that took part in the longitudinal study. But Jane Brody, do you think that that would be something to explore?
Well, you would have to explore it also for the poultry and fish consumption. And one would assume that all of these are potentially contaminated with the same risk, if there is a risk associated with the things that this gentleman is worried about.
All right. Is there a particular level of safety in eating red meats or processed meats?
First of all, we have to look at the amount that people consume at any given time. You know, 3 or 4 ounces of cooked red meat is a serving, and most people eat a lot more than that. But you shouldn't really be having meat as a steady diet. Meat should be is much better used as a condiment, as an accompaniment to other foods. Lots of vegetables and the whole grain carbohydrates are the way to go. The Mediterranean diet is the way to go. Every study that I have looked at in recent years has shown that the Mediterranean diet, where you have small amounts of animal protein with lots and lots of vegetables and complex carbohydrates, the unprocessed starchy foods, are the safest way to eat.
One of the nutrition experts who's quoted in the Washington Post story is Walter Ouellette of the Harvard School of Public mm-hmm. Health. And he says if you can cut back to 2 or 3 times a week, you see a significant benefit for the eating of the red meat. You know, for those, because what you say about a Mediterranean diet certainly makes sense and seems borne out by research. But for those who just really have that red meat craving, it would appear there's a benefit even if you could cut it back to 2 or 3 times a week.
Absolutely. I don't not eat red meat. I just don't eat it all the time. And if you eat it every day, well, then you're asking for trouble.
What are the implications for the high-protein Atkins-style diets?
The implications are serious. And I think that anyone who has followed this diet, and I have really railed against it from the get-go, and that goes back to the 1970s when it first came out, that this is a danger, and people are only looking at short-term benefit and not at long-term risk. And I'm assuming that it's not a good idea to be safe and skinny and dead, you know?
All right, Jane Brody, thank you very much. We appreciate your being with us on Air Talk and talking about some of the general implications of this longitudinal study. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Jane Brody is health columnist for the New York Times, weighing in on this study that has just been published. It was conducted by the National Cancer Institute, published in the Archives of Internal Medicine. It found that routine consumption of fish, chicken, turkey, and other poultry decreased the risk of death by a small amount. But it found that eating above 4 ounces of red meat a day, those that did were more than 30% more likely to die during the 10 years that they were followed on this study between 1995 and 2005. This is Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC.
Hi, this is Renee Rivera. I have no time to read the paper or watch TV, so I turn to KPCC for informative, intelligent, balanced news. And since I'm in the car so much, I've become a KPCC news junkie. Even my 7 and 12-year-olds enjoy much of the programming, like This American Life, and we've had some great discussions. So thanks to you, KPCC, from me and my family for being an important part of our family and day.
To become a part of our family, just pick up the phone and dial 866-888-5722 or go to kpcc.org. And thanks.
Great to hear. Great to hear that kind of listener and member endorsement for KPCC. Larry Mantle with Mindy Steinman, longtime Air Talk producer. We are so close to this hour's goal, we can all but taste it, and I'm sure there's no red meat in it. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722. For those who just tuned in, Mindy, can you explain what's going on?
Okay, I'm going to take a deep breath because it's a big one. We are working on an overall goal of 750 members by noon today. When we hit that, when we get 750 members, we also get to accept a very generous $25,000 from our board chair, Gordon Crawford. And we get to end on-air fundraising for the day at noon. So no fundraising during Pat Morrison, during All Things Considered. We give you the afternoon and the evening off. 866-888-5722 or kpcc.org. Your dollar's going three times as far right now.
Every contribution right now leverages $25,000 from the chairman of our Southern California Public Radio Board, Gordon Crawford. A man who's very generously supported this station with his time and his finances. He's attempting to encourage you to use this $25,000 gift to prompt you to action right now. kpcc.org, 866-888-5722. And if and when we can accomplish this, then all this afternoon we are fundraiser-free all evening long here on 89.3.
39 members to go in this hour. We've broken it down into bite-sized chunks so we can stay on track for that overall goal by noon today. 39 more members still needed in the last 4 minutes of this hour of Air Talk. Please be the very next member.
We need every phone line filled. The only way to fulfill this $25,000 challenge and the only way we can bring to a close our power block of fundraising at noon today is with your gift now. That's a big goal. We can do it. We have 35 members now to go in just 4 more minutes of this hour of Air Talk. 33 members in 4 minutes. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722.
Graciela Guardado heard the call in Glendale renewing. She says, I don't have a lot to give, but I really want KPCC to meet this $25,000 challenge. I hope my small contribution helps. It does,
oh,
Graciela.
It does.
It binds together with all the other contributions. So whatever amount is right for you to donate, do it right now at kpcc.org. Maybe that's $89 for the whole year.
And at that level, we will thank you with a reusable grocery bag, environmentally conscious. Plus, whenever you open it up in the market, it'll have our call letters on it and show that you're a KPCC supporter, not just a listener. We'd love to get this into your hands or your car trunk to take with you and go shopping. $89 of annual giving makes it so. KPCC.org, 866-888-5722.
27 members still needed in the
so
next
close.
3 minutes, two and a half minutes now of Air Talk before the next hour gets underway. Please don't wait a minute longer. We're asking for 2 to 3 minutes of your time on the web at kpcc.org or on the phone at 866-888-5722. Now when your dollars go three times as far.
Shelley Kirsch of Los Angeles renews her membership and says, if I could give the whole 25 grand myself, I certainly would. That's what KPCC means to me. Year after year, I listen all the way.